delegation, who constituted the delegation from the Department of Transport. Over to you, Mr. Lupeka.
Thank you, Chairperson. In terms of the apologies that we have, well, it's your apology, but we're in the meeting, Honorable Dango, also Honorable Matebula. Those are the apologies. Members on the platform, I see it's you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Mushodi, Honorable Mamarakan, Honorable Boshoff, Honorable Tafeni, Honorable Lond. If there's anyone whom I've muted, I think there's no one. So, thank you, Chair.
Yes, Honorable Tafeni.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning to the members. Honorable Matevula is no longer a member.
Okay.
I hear the apology of Honorable Matevula, but he's no longer the member, even in the NOP. There is some person, Lucia, that is swearing in on last week from Nimbop.
Yes. Yeah, we appreciate that. We were informed in the plenary last week that there's a new member who has been sworn in. But what's supposed to be happening formally is to inform the committee also of the new member so that that name get 80 seats before the new member, if the member is going to be part of this committee. His name should be, or her name should be ATC. So if you can make the organization aware or the party aware of such requirements. Thank you very much.
I will inform the chief. Thank you, Chair.
All right, thank you so much. Let me take this opportunity then to welcome the Deputy Minister and over to him. Over to you, DM.
Yes, there is a hand. Honorable
Lund. Oh, sorry.
Honorable Lund. Thank you, Chair. I just want to find out how could an apology submitted as read by the committee secretary and that member is no longer a member of parliament anymore. It's not a major thing, but I mean, I just find it strange that she's no longer a member, but an apology was received.
No, I'm sure, Honorable, Mr. Lupeka is taking for granted that whoever is not there in the meeting, and therefore, I don't think it's an apology, except that Mr. Lupeka, you should have indicated there's people that or members that are absent, not necessary as an apology, because no formal apology was communicated to you or to the chairperson. So we regard as a person who is absent.
Chairperson,
yes.
We did receive an apology that the member is on maternity leave.
Oh, okay. That's
yes.
Right.
Yes.
All right. No, that's right. I agree with that. Yeah,
yes.
There was an indication that she went on maternity leave
yes.
Before she was then replaced permanently by a party. Thank you very much, Honorable Lund. Can I now hand over to...
Chairperson, before you hand over to the Deputy Minister, maybe you will wish to recognize members from the provincial legislature who are in our meeting today.
Oh, okay. Thank you so much. We also welcome honorable members from the legislatures. It is a good idea that when we start with the briefing, especially these are Section 76 bills, it's important that they form part of the meeting. Let me also indicate that today is my birthday. Maybe all these birthdays, when they start, I have to deal with the legislation. Even last year, we were introducing a new legislation. Yeah, let me then hand over to the DM for the opening remarks, introduce his delegation, and also indicate you will be taking us through the briefing there this morning. Over to you, Honorable DM.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Honorable members. It's always a great honor and privilege to appear before the National Council of Provinces in whatever format it is. On behalf of the Minister of Transport, it is my singular honor to introduce to you very briefly our submission to yourselves of the marine bill. I'm trying to find the right name, Marine Pollution Bill. The bill has served before the National Assembly, and it is now before yourselves, honorable members, for consideration and take it to the next level that you would normally take it. Now, the bill has been billed as the Oil Pollution Preparedness and Cooperation Bill, Bill 10 of 2022. And what is this bill seeking to do? It is in response of a cooperation bill that was approved by Cabinet on the 9th of February 2022. It was presented before Parliament in July as the Oil Pollution Preparedness and Cooperation Bill, as I mentioned before. And so it is before you, honorable members, and I am sure that the legal people would be able to take the honorable members through. Safe to say, it is a bill that brings to align ourselves with what all other marine countries are. South Africa, we regard ourselves a marine country because we boast a very, very okay, did I start on the wrong one, Honorable Chair? Oh, it's both of them. It's the marine, okay. That interaction. Apologies for that. So this cooperation bill really seeks to bring us in line with other international conventions. As we know, in the maritime space, that there is a lot of international ships that dock on our shores or pass through, or our own flags that go to other countries. So it's very important that we do cooperate, or we align ourselves with our other countries so that we can be aligned with all international protocols. So that is what the Marine Pollution Prevention of Pollution Bill seeks to do. The other one is the Transport Appeal Tribunal, which is something that we are bringing before yourselves to look at and consider it. And the purpose of a tribunal really is to adjudicate and decide upon all appeals that would be received by parties that have been not happy by a particular decision taken by our regulating entities in the department, some of them being the Crossroad Transport Agency, the National Port Regulator, the National Public Transport Regulator, amongst others. So this bill seeks to establish this appeal tribunal such that there is one body independently so that can be able to adjudicate on all such matters as they might arise. Chairperson, without further delay, let me introduce the DDG who will lead our delegation as it relates to the first bill, the marine one, and I should expect
that DDG Madia is here with Mr. Dumisani Nduli, who is also from the same branch of Maritime. They will take us through. I do expect that they will either both of them take us through the Transport Appeal Tribunal, or one of them will take us through. Chairperson, I hand over to yourself. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable DM. Let's send an over to DDG. Over to you, DDG. You'll indicate which one you'll be starting with.
Good morning, Chair. Thank you, Deputy Minister, and good morning to the esteemed members of the Senate Committee. I will start with the Marine Pollution Chair, and then I will then request Mr. Dooley to take the Select Committee on that particular subject. Thank you very much. Over to you, Mr. Dooley.
Thank you very much, DDG, and thank you, Deputy Minister, for introducing the bill that is before the Select Committee. Good morning, members, excellencies. I'm not sure whether we are able to share the screen. Oh, yes, we are able to. Thank you very much. So I'll be taking the members of the Select Committee through this very important piece of draft legislation, which we are amending an existing Act of Parliament, which is the Marine Pollution Prevention of Pollution from Ships, Act 2 of 1986. What you see in front of you is a slide that shows the Republic's marine pollution strategy. The colors reflect areas where we have achieved and areas that are critical and are already on the table for us to achieve. So once this picture turns green, then as a state, we would be having an assurance that we are giving full effect to the international treaties relating to pollution prevention from merchant ships. The box that we are now dealing with relates to the incorporation of Annexes 4 and Annexes 6 of the Marine Pollution Prevention Convention, as indicated that its intention is primarily to provide a mechanism to deal with the safe management of sewerage from ships, and as well as to deal with the greenhouse gas emissions, which are provided for under Annex 6 of the convention. And we are delighted that this bill has now traveled to a point where it has reached the Senate Committee. South Africa is a party to the International Convention for the Prevention of Pollution from Ships, which is an IMO treaty adopted in 1973. When the convention was adopted in 1973, it had five annexes, but in 1997, the IMO adopted a protocol which then amended the original treaty to incorporate a new Annex 6. This bill that is before the Select Committee then intends to incorporate MAPOLA Annex 4 and Annex 6 into the Marine Pollution Prevention from Ships Act of 1986. MAPOLA Annex 4 regulates the activities for the treatment and safe disposal of sewerage from ships. MAPOLA Annex 6, on the other hand, is the main global instrument that addresses ship energy efficiency management and greenhouse gas emissions. The benefits of incorporating these two treaties would allow us to restrict the discharge of sewerage and therefore reduce the nutrient loads caused by sewerage discharge from passenger ships into the sea. Members would have noticed the growing number of cruise ships visiting our shores and the importance of this of incorporating this treaty therefore becomes even more paramount and important. The prevention, reduction and control of marine pollution from the air or indirectly through the air and to preserve the maritime environment through the complete elimination of pollution by all or other harmful substances as well as minimizing the accidental discharge of such substances. Ships, therefore, would be required to use fuel with no more than 0.5, 0.50 sulfur content or use of approved treatment systems we refer to as scrubbers. If then I can just take through the members' exact list to the clauses that this bill proposes to amend. We intend to amend Section 1 of the present Act and to close the gap of the absence of these two instruments in the definition of the Convention. So the amendment, therefore, would mean the definition would read the International Convention for the Prevention of Pollution from Ships, 1973, as amended by the Protocol of 1978, adopted by the Intergovernmental Consultative Organization in London, 17 February 1978, including any annexes, regulations, and protocols which are issued in terms thereof and set out in the schedule. The benefits of doing this is that the convention would now be part of the annexes that are appended to the primary legislation. We also intend amending Section 2A to close the gap of the absence of the convention into South African law as it is required in terms of Section 213 of the Constitution. And this amendment would then mean that we would have incorporated the convention into South African law so as to enable it to have the force of law in the Republic. We would then amend the following section, subject to the provision of this Act, the convention has the force of law in the Republic, and the minister shall, as soon as practicable after the entry into force for the Republic of any amendment to the convention, amend its schedule by notice in the Gazette to reflect such amendment. So this mechanism would ensure, therefore, that the South African maritime pollution legislation would continuously be up to date, because this mechanism of the minister being able to use the provisions of this part of the Act would assist in updating the schedule as and when there are changes that IMO has negotiated and agreed to. We also intend to amend Clause 2, Section 2B, to close the gap of an absence of what we refer to as the technical standards. So from time to time, the authority, which is the South African Maritime Safety Authority, would now be empowered to issue technical standards for marine pollution from ships on such matters as may be prescribed by regulation. So this will then allow the authority to have the power of enforcement of the provisions of the treaty. So this would then read as follows: the authority may issue technical standards for marine pollution from ships on such matters as may be prescribed by regulation, and that a technical standard shall have the force of law. As stated, so this would be an enabler to the authority in order to enforce compliance with technical standards so published in the manner as provided for in the Act and the regulation. We also intend to amend Clause 3, to amend Section 3 to close the gap of an absence of the regulations for annexes 4 and 6, as members will appreciate, for the fact that they were not part of the principal act. Now, the minister could not make, was not able to make a regulation pertaining to this, so we would now be incorporating. And the matters that would therefore be subject to regulation are those that are listed in, I will not go through all of them, other than just to indicate that it would include the member, the matters that are listed under column 4 of this slide. And the benefit of this would be is that it will now have the regulation to give a clear guidance on how to implement the principal act on the matters as listed under section 3. We also intend to the bill 6 to amend section 3A to close the gap of an internationally the non-compliance in terms of the fine that can be imposed. The present act had a very low fine for cases where there has been a transgression, and we have now aligned that to be on par not only with NEMA, which is National Marine. Okay, so the fine for non-compliance has now been increased to 10 million or to imprisonment for a period not exceeding 10 years. The reason why we are aligning it in this way is because the impact that an oil spill can have on the maritime environment, particularly in all matters that are linked to the sea, may have devastating impact economically, socially, and environmentally. So by increasing the fine, we are just aligning with the best practice as well. Globally, we have done a benchmarking that that confirms this. And this will also be in line with the zero tolerance pollution prevention and compliance policy that the department is respected. Clause 5 of the Bill 6 to amend Section 3 of the Act by closing the gap of the power of the Minister to establish advisory committees, and the amendment will then grant the Minister the power to establish specialized committees to advise the Minister. And so the section B then would read as follows: the Minister may appoint an advisory committee to advise him or her in regard to any particular matter dealt with by this Act, conclude cooperative agreements with other states, delegate and assign it to any official of the department in regard to any matter. So this is really aligning this particular Act with the provision that exists in all the other instruments where the Minister has such power to establish committees that would advise the Minister. In the schedule of the Act, we have included the both annexes, which will now be they will now form part of the principal Act, and in that way it would just be concluding the fact that we are now giving full effect to the treaties as indicated, Annex 4 and Annex 6. In terms of consultation, Chair, moving towards conclusion, we have consulted before we went to Cabinet, and we've consulted all the parties that are indicated there in this slide, but also as the Deputy Minister has reported, this bill has set before the Portfolio Committee on Transport, where as well there were public participation, and we received invaluable comments, and they've now been incorporated as far as is possible within the limits of the fact that we are adopting a treaty which has already been accepted by the Republic, so where we are limited in terms of what can be changed, but it's just the incorporation in terms of Section 213 of the Constitution. So the recommendation then would be, as the Deputy Minister has expressed, to request the SEF Committee to approve the amendments to the Marine Pollution Prevention of Pollution from Ships Act 1986, so as to give effect to Annex 4 of the International Convention for the Prevention of Pollution from Ships, to incorporate the 1997 protocol in order to give effect to Annex 4, 6 of the Convention. I thank you, and then hand over to the DDG. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. This is Member Dango here. I'm joining you from Strasbourg. Member Hai has just gone for a brief break. So can somebody just guide me as to where we are there on the agenda? Stupeka?
Thank you, Honorable Dango. On the agenda, they will just finish one bill, which is the marine pollution. So it will be up to you, Team Chair, to whether at least we can allow members, you know, to post questions, or then we take another the next presentation. Thank you.
I would suggest that we take the next presentation. Hello?
Yes, the department.
Thank you. Can the department proceed?
Thank you very much. Chair, thank you very much. Sorry, DDG. I just wanted to introduce the person who will be doing the second bill. If I hear the committee is deciding to take both presentations, and in that instance, Advocate Matebese, who is in the meeting, who will take the committee through. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable TM. Over to you, sir.
Thank you very much, Honorable Members. I'm not sure whether I am audible, Chairperson.
Very audible.
Thank you, sir.
Okay.
Thank you, Acting Chair. Thank you. I don't know whether the committee will slide the screen, or must I share the screen on my side? We have prepared a screen as the department for the committee. That I will slide on.
Mr. Chupeka, can you please indicate?
They must share on their side. We have given them the sharing right.
Okay. Thank you so much. Over to you, sir.
That means I must share my side. Okay.
Yes. You have been given a right to say.
Okay. Thank you, Acting Chairperson and Honorable Members. I am opening the bill now.
Can the colleagues mute while just trying to put the presentation, please?
Just have it in full slideshow, please. and continue. DME must give them some skills.
Thank you, honourable members. I'm back again. The slide before you is the Transport Appeal Tribunal Amendment Bill D8 of 2020, presentation to the Select Committee on Transport, Public Services, Administration, Public Works and Infrastructure, scheduled for the 18th October 2023. And we have also, because we received your good sales agenda of November, and also we will also included that in the presentation so that the information can be inclusive at once. And we went on to say, and provincial briefing by the permanent delegates on the TT bill scheduled for 1 November, and we're still reaching for that one. If I can go to slide 2. Slide 2 is about the content, the background, the main reason of the amendment bill, the definitions, the appointment of the TT members, the extension of term of office of the TT members, fixing dates, etc. for the hearing, time limits to implement the TT decisions, directives to regulatory entities, suspension of decisions of regulatory entities, delays and frivolous actions, and also it continues. Investigations by the TT, transitional arrangement, consequential amendment, consultation, impact on clause 56 of the Rail Safety Bill on the TT amendment bill, and conclusion. Honourable members, if I can preface by saying this is an amendment of the Principal Act. The Principal Act is still in active act, TT Act 39 of 1998, but because of the development that has happened, the public
Can you please mute?
mute.
Please. Please focus on the meeting.
Thank you, Honorable Acting Chair and members. Now, this is an amendment. We are trying to make the bill to be more effective for the TT to execute its legislative mandate. It's not the new act. It's an amendment of the bill that is there, the Principal Act, Act 39 of 1998. The background is the Transport Appeal Tribunal Act 39 of 1998, the Principal Act, was passed in 1998 to create Transport Appeal Tribunal, formerly known as TT. The TT deals with appeals relating to applications for operating licenses under the National Land Transport Act No. 5 of 2009. If you read the TT Act with the NLTA, also the cross-border. These appeals are from the Act decisions, directions or decisions of the National Public Transport Regulator, the provincial regional entities, and municipal regional entities. Now, these structures are part of the NLTA, that is Act No. 5 of 2009. These are entities of the NLTA where the TT has to decide on the decisions that they have made when an applicant is not happy or aggrieved with the particular outcome of the operating license or related matter. No MREs have been established with municipal regional entities for now, but the process is afoot to establish the same. Next slide, the background continues. The TT also deals with appeals relating to cross-border permits under the Cross-Border Road Transport Act No. 4 of 1998, as I previously said. Prior to the establishment of the TT, the National Transport Commission dealt with these appeals before the TT was put into action. Next slide. Main reason for the amendment bill. Since its establishment, the TT has encouraged a number of problems and issues which require amendments to the Principal Act, as I earlier indicated. The Principal Act also requires updating in respect of the development since 1998. There are also some technical issues that need amendment of the Act.
these problems and issues that are addressed in the TT Amendment Bill, the 8 of 2020, and are elaborated below. Consequential amendments are also made so that we are aligned with the developments that have came in. Next slide, definitions. Section 1, clause 1 section of the Act, section 1, amendment, redundant definitions such as board, because now the board are no longer there, the board were part of the NLTTA, National Land Transport Transition Act of 2000, which has been repealed by the NLTA of 2009. Now, redundant definitions such as the board, interprovincial transport, and national land transport decisions are detailed from the principal act. Purpose of the amendment, the board has been replaced by a referral entity in the NLTA. Interprovincial transport was only relevant to provincial appeals bodies, which no longer exist. National land transport legislation was included because such legislation had not yet been enacted in 1998. It is replaced by a reference to the NLTA. Clause 1B, section 1, a new definition of act, direction, or decision is inserted. This clarifies and expands on the act or directions and decisions which are subject to appeal by the TT. The purpose is to address doubts expressed about this during the hearing session. There was some argument that this appeal, this transgression, so to speak, by the unhappiness from the decision made by the PRE are included in the definition of the THX. Now, the definitions are trying to address so that what comes for the THX must be inclusive and be narrated as much as possible so that there are no confusion or doubts. Definitions continue. Clause 1B, section 1, continues. A new definition of cross-border road transport act is inserted. Purpose, it makes it easier to read the principal act and to standardize with the same definition in the NLTA, because we're cross-referencing KT, cross-border, and NLTA. They must say the same thing with regards to appeals. 1G, section 1, a new definition of national land transport act is inserted. It will replace the general reference to land transport legislation. 1F, section 1, definition of electoral committee, amended consequential amendment, which they have to align with the new NLTA developments. 1, a new definition of electoral entity is inserted to standardize with the definition of the NLTA. Presentation continue. Appointment of KT members. Bill 2A. Clause 2A, section of the Act 41, the amendment bill will remove the requirement that the minister must consult the 9 provincial MECs before appointing TT members. The purpose of the amendment, this requirement has proved to be unworkable and unnecessary as the minister is performing a national mandate while MEC are responsible for their provincial mandate when appointing the PREs. But on that one, but the slide as we go, I think slide 23 will answer that one also. In the National Assembly, the honorable members in the National Assembly disagreed with the proposal, and now that proposal fall out, and the principal act will remain with the provincial members, MECs, being consulted, because the argument was that that was part of the intergovernmental relations framework, of which the department so upgrades. 2B, section 42, the amendment deal will provide that the TT members must have expertise in public transport. The principal act does not provide for the appointment of members with expertise in public transport matters, which should be cured by the amendment bill. Such expertise is considered necessary because we have all other expertise when the minister appoints the TT members, except the skills or expertise in public transport. Now the amendment is trying to cater for that. Next slide, extension of terms of the Office of TT members. Clause 3, section 7, subsection 4, amendment. The amendment bill will allow the minister to extend the period of office of TT member, of a TT member, for a period not exceeding 12 months. under the purpose of the amendment, under the principal act, 30 members must be appointed for a fixed term not longer than 3 years. It is sometimes expedient to extend the term of office of the individual members, e.g. to enable them to deal with matters that are badly heard or incomplete because of their knowledge, insight, to preserve or to preserve institutional memory for a matter, as to have new and we don't have the people that know about the matter, it becomes a challenge because KT operates like court. You have to have institutional memory in making a proper decision. Next slide. Fixing dates, etc. for hearings. Clause 4, section 9, subsection 1. The principal act will be amended to provide that the director general of the department must fix dates, times and places for hearings of the KT after consultation with the KT. It is better for the DG to fix dates, times and places for hearings so that the necessary administrative arrangements can be put in place timeously, subject to budgetary constraints. The department is responsible for the budget, staff and resources of the TG. This amendment is made in response to comments received. If I can just allude to other members that the TG is not part of the scheduled entities in the Public Finance Management Act as amended. Now, all the budget of the TT falls within the budget of the Public Transport Branch, and the secretariat of the TT is located at the department appointed by the DG to do that particular work by the permanent officials of the department. Hence, now the question of budget and everything that the DG must be conscientized to the Public Transport Branch when those processes are performed by the TT. Next slide. Time limits to implement a TT decision. Clause 6E, section 12, subsection 4 and subsection 8, amendment. The amendment bill will empower the TT to impose time limits within which its decision must be implemented once it has made a decision. Purpose, sometimes when the TT takes a decision imposing duties on parties such as regulatory entities, it is advisable for the TT to impose time limits for performing the duty to ensure implementation of the TT's decisions. So that the TT has got a cutoff date, you must implement this decision until this budget is so that the interests of the public are served at the end of the day, purposefully. Next slide, directives to regional entities. Clause 6F, section 12, subsection 5 and 6, the amendment. The amendment bill provides that where a regional entity or the regional committee fail to comply with the decision of the TT may issue a directive describing the failure to comply with their obligations and state steps that must be taken to meet their obligations. The entity must then comply with the directive within the time specified. It also provides that when such a directive is issued, the TT must notify the minister, the relevant embassy, or a mayor in the municipality, as the case may be, so that they can assist in assuring compliance with the directive. This is a new amendment altogether. The purpose of the amendment, it often happens that regulatory entities fail to implement or give effect to a ruling or a decision of the TT within the time specified by the TT or within a reasonable time or at all, the amendment will facilitate compliance so that it can make it effective when the decision has been made and in its processes with the entities. Next slide, suspension of decision of the regional entity. Clause 7B, 7 subsection B, section 13 subsection B. Amendment, the amendment bill provides that a decision appealed against will be suspended automatically where an appeal is lodged with the TT within 30 days. A consequential amendment is also made to section 30. Purpose, this will expedite procedures in that appellants who appeal to the TT within 30 days will not have to lodge a formal application to suspend the decision of the regulatory entity. Once you appeal, because public transport has got if somebody was operating and given the operation, now to have that person to stop operation, you have to make in the principal act a suspension and a standing simultaneously with the notice of appeal. But now if you appeal in CDP, it will be automatic. That is made to be specific now, going forward, so that the processes can be made faster. Next slide, delays and frivolous actions. Clause 8B, section 14, subsection 5, amendment. The amendment bill will allow the TT to investigate any delays or frivolous vexatious or irrelevant actions taken by the parties to an appeal and take certain steps to counter them as listed in the bill. This clause makes consequential amendment to section 14 of the Principal Act. The purpose of the amendment is sometimes happening in proceedings before the TT that parties deliberately delay the proceedings. For example, where a TT is likely to have an adverse effect on the finances of the party that caused the delay. Parties also sometimes engage in frivolous, vexatious, or irrelevant actions, either to cause delays or for the other reasons. These actions not only waste the time of the TT and cause wasted costs, but are also unfair to the party or parties.
Just hold on, please. There's somebody who's disturbing the meeting. Keep on chatting. Was logged in. Can you please mute your mic? Please. And I would also like to welcome at this stage the chairperson, and I would also request him to take over after the presentation. Thank you so much. You can continue, sir.
Thank you, Acting Chair and honorable members. The next slide is investigations by the TT. Bill Clause 9, Section of the Act 16, Subsection 1, Amendment. The Principal Act provides that the DG must appoint officers in the DOT to perform administrative and secretarial work of the TT. The amendment bill will also permit such staff to be appointed to undertake investigations that are necessary for the TT to reach its decisions. The Act is also amended to remove the requirement for the DG to consult the TT before appointing staff. Purpose, the TT needs to be able to conduct its own investigations and require staff and resources to do so. It has proved unnecessary to require the DG to consult the TT before appointing the staff. Because, as I earlier indicated, honorable members, the officials of the department are permanently employed through Public Service Act, and the members of the tribunal are appointed to the Transport Appeal Tribunal Act and on a 3-year term basis, and they come and go, and the permanent staff of the department remain within the department. Hence now the DG has to appoint to assist for the work processes and execution of the mandate of the TT. The next slide, transition arrangements. Clause B, section 18, amendment. The amendment bill amends section 18 of the Principal Act and effect consequential amendments. The reference to national land transport legislation in the Principal Act is replaced with the reference to Transition Act. This is a consequential amendment necessitated by the fact that the definitions of the board and national land transport legislations are being repealed, taking into account the developments in it, as I've indicated earlier to the honorable members, just to align what happened in 1998 and what has happened recently with the NLTA promulgation. Next slide, constitutional amendments. The amendment bill effects various constitutional amendments to the Principal Act. These amendments are necessary for example, by the fact that some definitions have been replaced. If the boards are no longer there, there's a PRP now, and everything similar to that effect. Next slide, consultation. That is done with the amendment now of the bill on the clauses. Now consultation, how the process unfolded from day one up to where it is now. The amendment bill was published for comment in the Government Gazette on the 27 October 2017. A national workshop was held on the 26 February 2018 with government stakeholders, And last arrest of ourselves on the 27th February 2018 is private sector holders, stakeholders, sorry. The following are consulted during the workshops: the National Public Transport Regulator, the Cross-Border Road Transport Agency, the 9 provincial registered entities. Conversation continue. The 9 provincial departments responsible for transport, the South African National Taxi Association Council, the National Taxi Alliance, the Southern African Bus Operators Association, the South African National Small Bus Operators Association, the METAS Taxi Industry and Electronic Hailing Operators, and Transport Appeal Tribunal members. Next slide. Consultation continue. Written comments were received from the following: the Provincial Minister of Transport and Public Works, Western Cape, the Cross-Border Road Transport Agency, the City of Cape Town Transport and Urban Development Authority, and the Railway Safety Directorate of the Department of Transport. And next slide. Consultation continue. The amendment bill was tabled at the National Economic Development and Labour Council NEDLAC, Socio-Economic Impact Assessment System, SEAS was conducted by the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation. Economic sector, employment and infrastructure development cluster was consulted, and the amendment bill was introduced to the National Assembly on the 29 May 2020. The amendment bill was approved by the Cabinet on the 12 February 2021. The amendment bill was presented to PCOT on the 25th August 2021. Subsequently, the PCOT publicized the amendment bill for public comments with the closing date of 8 October 2021. Furthermore, on the 7th December 2021, the PCOT considered the list of written submissions received. Next slide. Consultation continue. On 1 March 2022, the PCOT held a virtual meeting to deal with the received 2 comments on the amendment bill. Consequently, the JD Directorate responded to the received comments and forwarded its input to the Duties Legislation Directorate on the 4th July 2022. Therefore, on the 1st November 2022, the PCOT invited the department to its meeting to consider its responses from the received 2 written submissions, and the department responded accordingly, and the emerging impact of Clause 56 of the Rail Safety Bill B7 2021 was also presented and deliberated upon. At the end of the PCOT meeting, it was stated that the department will be advised on the way forward regarding Clause 56 of the Rail Safety Bill with regard to the TG Amendment Bill process, because now there were 2 bills before the portfolio committee from the department trying to relate to each other. Furthermore, on the 15th of November 2022, the PCOT invited the department to its meeting to consider the JT bill, clause by clause, wherein most of the clauses were agreed to and adopted for amendment. It was resolved that the removal of clause 2A dealing with the consultation of members of the MECs is not supported and must be retained, as its removal is against the spirit of intergovernmental relations. The comment that I made earlier when I talk about the removal of the clause that the Principal Act, the Minister must consult with the MECs when appointing the TQ members. That was rejected and still remains as it is in the Principal Act. Next slide. Impact of Clause 56 of the Recipe Bill, as I mentioned earlier, on the TQ Amendment Bill. Now, the memorandum of the on the objects of the Rail Safety Bill provides as follows. Clause 54 to Clause 55 provides for an appeal mechanism against any decision by an employee of the Rail Safety Regulator or made in the name of the Rail Safety Regulator. The first level of appeal is to the CO in terms of Clause 54, then the Board Appeals Committee in terms of Clause 55, and ultimately to the Transport Appeal Tribunal in terms of Clause 56, established by Section 3 of the Transport Appeal Tribunal Act 1998, Act Number 39998, which is to be amended by the Transport Appeal Tribunal Amendment Bill, B8 2020, which is currently before being considered by Parliament. Our emphasis above underlining. Furthermore, it was resolved on 15 November that Clause 66 of the RSFT Bill will not be incorporated on the Treaty Amendment Bill processes, as the bill is not yet an Act of Parliament. Next slide. Impact of the Clause 56 continues. Consequently, the final advice from the Parliamentary State Law Advisor was the insertion of the new provision in the Treaty Amendment Amendment Bill that will accommodate public transport legislation or similar legislation that might refer their appeals to the Transport Appeal Tribunal. The third provision has been inserted in the Transport Tribunal Amendment Bill B8B after the development of the A list by the State Law Advisor in the PCOT 2020 SAS, or any relevant transport legislation as a case may be, to accommodate now the bill like the rail safety bill that is going to be enacted, and also any other bill that might come in. That sweeping provision will accommodate any bill that has to refer matters to the TT for appeal processes. Next slide, conclusion. The report on the Treaty Amendment Bill was on the other paper of the National Assembly, where it was deliberated upon and passed by the National Assembly on the 7 March 2023 and referred to the Select Committee on Transport, Public Service Administration, Public Works and Infrastructure, the good committee that now the department is making presentation to. In accordance to the status of the parliamentary processing on Bills 2023, 5th Session, 6th Parliament, dated 8 September 2023, it indicated that the Treaty Amendment Bill, B8B 2020, is with the LCOP as of 7 March 2023, which now is the process that is unfolding between the LCOP and the department. Next slide, the end. To process the Transport Appeal Tribunal Amendment Bill B8B 2020 further in accordance with the procedure established in Section 76 of the Constitution, and the ultimate enactment of the Treaty Amendment Act is crucial in regulating public transport in the country. I thank you. Thank you, Honourable Members and Acting Chairperson. That's the end.
Thank you, Mr. Matevesi. Thank you, Honorable Khalid, for your leadership and also members for ensuring that indeed we are able to start on time of engaging the Joint Steering Committee on Intelligence since 8 this morning. But be that as it may be, let's then also again express an appreciation from the presentation made. On the two bills that we have received, bill number B5B of 2022, and also bill B8B of 2020. Those are the two bills that we're dealing with, and I guess will be a number of engagements that honorable members would want to raise in relation to the two presentations, given the fact that the presentation covered a number of areas, the objects of the clause 2, clause 3, inter clause 4, in terms of the key areas what it is annex 4 and also and also annex 6 both in terms of the prevention of pollution by sewage from ships and also prevention of air pollution from ships. Let's then get an indication from members by show of hands if there are any questions that
Sir, sorry, sir, can we first allow the Cornell advisor to...
Yes, yeah, let's give Dr. Clark, and then thereafter we'll then give over to the legal advisor just to make a reflection in terms of the presentation.
Thank you for the reminder, Chair.
Just also to indicate that the Deputy Minister is also on the platform, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you for that reminder, Honorable Khai. Greetings to you also, Deputy GM, and my appreciation for your presence. Over to you, Dr. Black.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, honourable members. I'm a bit surprised. I usually come in after the oral submission that we provided. Chair, I provided the committee with a content note for the meeting. I'm not sure, Chair, if you want me to reflect as per the content note or if I'm going to be allowing members to decide which aspects to raise.
Yes, I think let's give over to the legal advice and maybe just to make a reflection in terms of the presentation.
Okay, Chair.
Yeah, I agree that you did some work. Let's check with the team from the legal services of the department. We'll get indication in terms of who's doing that.
Morning, Chairperson. My name is Andy Lechegana, and I'm from the Parliamentary Legal Service Office. And of course, the reason why I'm here is because of the... Okay, sorry, Chair.
I'm saying that welcome and my appreciation to taking the point.
Oh, thanks, sir. Now my role is a very... a small one. I'll be dealing with the marine pollution prevention of pollution from ships, Amendment Bill B5-2022. And as you may be aware that this is the second bite really on the cherry because it's coming from the other house already. So if you look at the long title of the bill, you'll see that it says to amend the marine pollution prevention of pollution from ships Act 1986, so as to give effect to Annex 6 of the International Convention for the Prevention of Pollution from Ships. Secondly, to incorporate the 1997 protocol in order to give effect to Annex 6 of the convention. So those are the two annexes, Chair, we're dealing with here, Annex 4 and Annex 6. And Chair, as you will appreciate that in terms of Section 231 of the Constitution, the provision reads as follows, the negotiating and signing of all international agreements is the responsibility of the National Executive. And Subsection 2 continues and says, an international agreement binds the Republic only after it has been approved by resolution in both the National Assembly and the National Council of Provinces, unless it is an agreement referred to in Subsection 2. Now, Chair, the role of the committee is very limited in the sense that this instrument, Chair, has already been negotiated and agreed to. And therefore, Chair, if you look at the annexes, I mean Annex 4 and Annex 6, there is nothing much in terms of amendment which the committee can do, but it's a question of the committee just giving its attitude, Chair, to say that whether they agree with these two annexes which have been incorporated now. So, Chair, I want to be upfront by saying, because of the nature of the instrument that is serving for us, we won't be changing the annexes, right? As I've already indicated, they've already been negotiated with the IMO. And of course, I think the duty of Parliament is to formulate an attitude, Chair, to say whether what has been presented to you is desirable. Then, of course, if it is, then the bill should pass, Chair. That's all I'm going to say, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Tijana, for that advice. Very precise to the point in terms of the role of the Select Committee in this regard in relation to both the ISIS. Let me then...
Greetings, Chef Ken.
Hi. Mr. Melele, also, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Chairperson. Greetings to yourself and all the members and everybody on the platform. I'm also Pumelele Ngema from the Parliamentary Legal Services, but my role is also limited only to the Transport Tribunal appeal, to the Tribunal, Chairperson. So I am only handling that amendment bill, which also amends the Principal Act that is already in our statutes. So we will be assisting the committee in that regard together with the state law advisor allocated to this bill. So for now, Chairperson, what the department has indicated, we are fully in agreement as well as the processes that went through the first house, the National Assembly, and the bill has been passed. That's why it's a B version now, which incorporates the changes that the first house indicated they would prefer to see in the executive bill. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Ms. Ngema, also for that advice in terms of the Appeal Tribunal amendment. Makes our work much more easier in terms of the guidance and approach that we have to play. I'm going to open the floor for discussion or clarification question from members. Let me start first, giving the fact that the started in terms of our own. I'll start first with the marine pollution, B5B. My question will mainly be around on the clause three, because clause three speaks to the extent to which the Minister of Transport has powers to make regulations relating to the prevention of air pollution from ships, and that the prevention of the pollution by the sewage from ships and any other incidental administrative or procedural matter, which might include, among others, the waste generated by the mitigation equipment. The question that I want to pose is whether the department conducted an assessment to confirm that the South African laboratories have the necessary capacity to process the fuel samples at the anticipated stage to ensure that the backlogs are not created. The second one relates to clause four, which relates mainly to the increase in terms of the fine in instances where there is a non-compliance. The question is whether would the 10 million fine ceiling still apply in respect of repeat offenders where there is a pattern of non-compliance to the act. The regulations that is contained in Annex 4 on matters that are possible for matters that could be on the chain, mainly around the reflection at the global trade level in terms of what is transported by the international shipping company, because clearly the view is that 90% of the global trade is transported by the global shipping industry. So the question is, what are the economic impact assessment findings in respect of the cost that the South African owned shipping companies will have to expand to ensure compliance to Annexure 4 and Annexure 6 of the period that will be required for the South African owner shipping company to attain the required compliance standards. In relation to Annexure 6 also, will the exemption also apply in instances where the discharge of sewage for the purpose of securing the safety of a ship and those on board for saving lives at sea or arose as a result of the negligence of the master or the owner of the ship? That is the question in relation to Annexure 4. Now, Annexure 6, the question that I want to pose is, what is the motivation for such an exemption and the protections that are in place to protect the environment during the exploration or the exploitation and associated with processing? Are there provisions of the annexa in is the provisions of the annexa in alignment with the provisions of the National Environmental Management and Air Quality or NEMA, as it is popularly known? Now, in relation to the appeal tribunal amendment bill, the question will be is in relation to the question to clause 2, which mainly speaks to the alignment or the consultation between the minister and the provincial MECs. Would the MECs via a general call for a public input on the appointment of TAC members still be able to provide inputs? Of course, this is mainly in relation to clause 2A, which amends section 4.1 of the Principal Act. The second one relates to clause 2B, which amends clause 4.2 of the Act. Is this provision wide enough to allow for the appointment of someone that has special skills at the appeal tribunal, such as data analysts, but who may not have worked in the public transport sector? In relation to clause 6, the question is, what mechanisms are available to the MECs or mayors to assist in assuring compliance to the range of directives that may be issued by the minister? Yeah, those are the questions that I thought I must raise to the team in relation to the two bills. Over to you, to the team. I don't know whether the minister will give the team to start or he will start. I think the discretion is on the minister, whether he will allow his team to run with the responses. Over to you. Or Mr. Matevisi, or any one of you?
Chair, I'm not sure if Deputy Minister is not facing challenges to connect.
Yeah, as I then propose the DDG, Mr. Mazia, that we can start, and then we'll then allow Mr. Matthews to also put another up.
Thank you, Chair. I will request Mr. Ntuli to lead, then I will sum up at the end. Thank you very much, Mr. Ntuli. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, DDG and Chairperson. Good morning. Yes, thank you very much for the questions that have been posed, more particularly in relation to the power given to the minister to provide a list of accredited fuel sample laboratories. Because at this present moment, the provisions of the convention are not in force in South Africa. There are limited tests that are being conducted at present. But as you would imagine, that once we have legislated on this, then it would be it would attract the interest from the laboratories in the country. There is a capacity at the CSIR, but we imagine that once the act is in force, they would then be an invitation for the laboratories to express their interest, and there would be an assessment process which would then be undertaken by the authority, which is South African Maritime Safety Authority in this case. And already the International Maritime Organization has developed guidelines on the accreditation of the fuel sample laboratory. So South Africa would then draw from that pool of expertise and knowledge in the accreditation of the of these laboratories. The question relating to repeat offenders, because these fines will be imposed by the courts, one therefore envisages that I think it would be in the wisdom of the judiciary to apply it. I think the acceptable principle in relation to how repeat offenders are to be treated. But I imagine that because South Africa is a member of the two post-state control regimes, and there is one called the Indian Ocean Memorandum of Understanding on post-state control and the Abuja Memorandum of Understanding on post-state control. These two post-state control MOUs provide for some listing, blacklisting of offenders, so that if an offender continuously offends, not only in one country, but in various jurisdictions covered by the Memorandum of Understanding on Post-State Control, they are very tight. The processes that would ensure that there are no one would escape the enforcement that the convention demands states to take. But I think it's quite clear that the amount of fines at least put us at an acceptable level, considering the impact this would have. This is not to say that this would be the only mechanism that the Republic would have resources to repair the damage that's been caused by this. There are other avenues where we would be able to draw to draw in the resources to respond. For instance, there is one bill that is also heading this way, which is the Oil Pollution Preparedness and Response. So that on its own, I think, as you, it is part of the areas that have to turn green in terms of achieving, as I indicated in the slides that I used in the presentation. So the mechanisms of dealing with offenders, I think, would be tightened by these amendments. Yes, indeed, shipping carries about more than 90% of global trade, and the issue of the compliance costs are a matter that I think dominated the discussions before this treaty, more especially Annex 6, was concluded at the IMO. There was an appreciation, or there is an appreciation, of the challenges faced by the developing countries in terms of compliance, and there are mechanisms that the IMO has developed to assist developing countries in terms of meeting some of these costs. But the for South Africa, as you would appreciate, that our shipping footprint at this stage is very limited, and that most of the South African ship owners have ships that are either on loan in terms of they're on charter agreements, so the compliance cost, then I think it would be that these ships, one criteria is the compliance that they would have to carry as and when they are chartered by South Africans. So the direct impact on the compliance cost in relation to ship owners would be very minimal in the case of South Africa. So our major interest would be on enforcing compliance, particularly targeting ships that traverse our waters or call in our ports. Then the other issue that was raised, I think, relates to the issues of exemptions and more particularly on ships that are engaged, or platforms that are engaged in exploration and exploitation, and as to whether there is an alignment with the NEMA Act. And the response to that is yes, there is a very close alignment, and hence a proposed amendment to increase the fines. But also, in addition to this, as I've indicated, the bill that is heading your shores, Chairperson, the Senate Committee's shores, is the Oil Pollution Preparedness and Response. So in that bill, there is a requirement for platforms and ships engaged in exploitation and exploration to conduct what is called risk assessments. So this act then helps us that by enforcing the zero tolerance on pollution, on marine pollution, that in preparing for a response, the other bill would deal with that. And so I think those were the matters that the chair raised. And if not, I'm sure we will be able to follow up with written responses in case it is needed. And I hand over to the DG. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Ntuli. DG?
Thank you, Chair. I'm not sure if we're going to cover the clarities on the other item on the agenda. Can we get a...
Yes.
Okay, I will then hand over to the advocate to take the committee, the select committee, through with the responses. Thank you very much.
Thank you, DG.
Thank you, DDT, and honorable members. If I hear the chairperson correctly, he will hopefully correct me if I got him wrong. The chairperson was having a question on clause 6, section 12, subsection 5 of the amendment bill. What happened is that I think the question was how is the minister going to implement that? Now, what happened is that as a department, while we are amending the teacher amendment bill, we are also repealing the teacher regulations of 2013 so that we have the regulations that will align with the teacher act. In order now, amendment act, in order now to effect clause 12, subsection 5, of the amendment and we have developed a form called the directive to regulatory entity or entity or regulatory committee. The form that will decide if the KT has made a decision and the decision is not implemented by the concerned entity. Although section 12(3) of the act is saying, principal act is saying the KT decision is deemed to be the decision of the entity concerned, but the entities are failing to action that provision, so that where now there's a problem of KT decision not being implemented, because KT is not like a court of law, it doesn't follow its decision. But now an appellant will come later, a month after a month or two, to say your decision is not being implemented, of which according to KT it was just an automatic, therefore, that the entity must implement. But now this form TTD, which is going to be part of the new regulations now going forward, form TTT04, is enabling the TT to inform the DG or the minister concerned or the MEC through the minister or the premier about the non-compliance by the relevant entity of the of implementation of the TT decision. And now once the TT fills that form, attached the decision, then now because as it was said, the intergovernmental relations have to kick in, because government to government cannot take each other to court. Now it has to be, that's why now it's a question of engagement further with the entity concerned, so that, and the political health concern, so that they can try and assist before the implementation of the KT decision. That's how the minister is going to be implementing that through the ANC, inverted commas, through the KT writing, filling form TT04, and then the matter goes up to the minister or DG, and it goes up to the provinces, so when necessary, MECs or mayor, the premier also, if the MRE go to mayor and everything. But there is a form to cater that and implement that amendment 12.5, subsection 5, order of the chair. I think it was that, unless I'm missing another question that came from the chair. Thank you, chair.
No, thank you. There's just one thing that I need to touch on. I think the one that speaks to the removal of the requirement that the minister must consult the non-provincial non-provincial MECs. So I wanted to
take that one.
I mean, yes, you can take it.
It's Pumelele, Chairperson. I think as the department indicated, it's a principal act that we are amending. And when it went before the First House, I guess, had a similar concern as you are raising. And that is why from the B version that appears now, you would see that that provision, which was removing that engagement, is now no longer in the B version, which means we revert back to what the original act was stating. So that after consultation required between the minister and the MCs will still continue to take place for the constitution of the tribunal.
Oh, brilliant. I think thanks for that reminder. Let me just check this whether there are any further directions. Looks like members are filed. Number Fafa, and maybe what we can do, let's give report to the committee secretary just to outline the process to be followed after this. Committee secretary?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, the process that are going to be followed, since these two pieces of legislation are Section 76, what is going to happen? We are going to process them as we process all the Section 76 bills. So it will go to the provinces.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think it's important, particularly in terms of our 6-week cycle. It is important that our process plan on these two bills must be decided whether at least the latest by the 30th of March, we have the bill is adopted by the Judicial Council of Provinces. But in that group, we want to make it the 1st of March, but we'll make provision. And then quite well for sure that I think the 9th of February is the State of the Nation, and then it will be budget speech. But because it is a busy year, it is important that that aspect must be taken into account. But of course, appreciating the Doctors for Life in terms of meaningful public participation, and that is just the point that I must emphasize. It was as important that these members must be conscious of the fact that we have a tight program, because this is the last remaining few months of the sixth administration, and we don't want a situation where we are found wanting as the committee in terms of our responsibilities to make laws. I think I'm grateful for that. I want to propose that we shall the minutes to the next meeting, appreciating the fact that some of our members are abroad, and I suspect there will be other engagements that they will be busy with, but also need to appreciate their commitment and also their readiness to prioritize this meeting despite the fact that they are engaged on an outbound mission. So let's make sure that next week all the outstanding minutes are dealt with. Let me then take this opportunity to express a word of gratitude. I don't know whether the DM is able to say a last remaining words if his connectivity is in order. Failing which, then ask the DDG maybe just to say a word or two. Is the DM ready now for the in terms of connectivity? DDG, any answer in relation to that?
I'm not sure. Maybe he's still experiencing challenges, Chair. But nonetheless, we would like to take this opportunity to you, Chair, and the esteemed members of the Select Committee, for giving the department and audience what we came here for, was to pray that these two items get the nod of the Select Committee. And we think that we have achieved that, and we would like to thank very much for the audience of the Select Committee. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, DG. Let me then, on behalf of the Select Committee, also to extend a word of gratitude to yourself and your team for briefing the Select Committee, and also prepare ourselves for provincial briefings. We usually have the benefit of your staff's attendance in those provincial briefings to make it much more easier, and we are looking forward to that. And then secondly, allow me to take this opportunity to express a word of gratitude to all the members of the Select Committee for the honor of ensuring that despite their hectic schedule, they are able to ensure that this briefing its place, and let us also give them an educational benefit. We know that they are around funds, but despite that, some of them, all of them, make sure that they are part and parcel of this meeting. That is indeed an illustration of commitment. It's an illustration of the fact that you are there for the cause. And also the communication team from Parliament and the legal services, both advocate. Our appreciation to your advice and guidance, and also the Select Committee staff led by the Secretary, Content Advisor, the researcher, and also the PA in the office of the Chair. So this meeting stands adjourned. Thank you.
Recording stopped.
Thank you, Maragani.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Chairperson. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you,
leadership.
Goodbye.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you.
Mama Dihan. Bye-bye, Mama Dihan. See you next week, ne? Sure.
Hi, Dumela, bye. And down.